VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 481, recorded on October 8th, 481st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast on the 314th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Powell.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Durr.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback. I can't believe I said the intro without any problems. Amazing. So, yeah. Before we move on, TJ, did you get that little message I sent to you about Neo? It's coming to PC. Everything is coming to PC now.
Yeah, I did see that. I was really happy to see that. That's great.
And it's gonna have all the DLC with it too.
So. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, are you still playing Neo?
Yes, it's one of the few games that I go back to over and over again.
Okay. Well, guess what? That'll segue into what have you been playing? So TJ, continue on.
Yeah. So like, I haven't been playing that this week, but I will say that like one of the things that sets Neo apart from like a Dark Souls game, it's a lot like a Dark Souls game, but it's also, I mean, it's made by the guys who made Ninja Gaiden on the Xbox. Right. So, it's broken up into levels, and I think that's much easier to deal with than Dark Souls. I know there's like chapters and checkpoints in Dark Souls, but, it's a pain in the ass to go through that world. Whereas, Neo has small levels with checkpoints in between and definitive boss areas, and it's a much easier to pick up and put down game, I think.
All right. By the way, you talked about playing Judge last week. That's Judge with a Y, for whatever reason. You didn't mention that they were done by the guys who did Neon Chrome, and basically it's a spiritual sequel.
Oh, yeah. I haven't played Neon Chrome.
Well, Neon Chrome is Judge, except without Judge. But yeah, they definitely use the same engine that they use for Neon Chrome. And one thing, I don't know if you mentioned it last week, is that Judge is very, very neon.
Hmm.
It is very neon-y when you look at it. You know, I'm talking about how it looks. Because if you play the game, it's sort of like everything is glowing like you're in Tron.
Yeah, it's set in a Judge Dredd type universe, and it's all cyberpunk, and yeah, there's a lot of, there is a lot of neon. Like, when you're going into buildings, whether they're warehouses or clubs, there's all sorts of just, like, glows and bright, slightly bright colors. Like, every one of the punks has, like, a weird-ass, like, cyberpunk hairdo that
glows.
Makes, yeah.
By the way, Judge replaces all the U's with Y's, so you have executions and stuff like that. It doesn't quite work for me, because I think it's a little bit over... I mean, I get the joke, or even if they're not joking. It's not cool, it's not funny, it's just annoying.
It's not even just Y's. They replace vowels in all sorts of different parts of the game. Sometimes it's an A, sometimes it's an I. And most of the time it breaks my heart as a writer and editor when I'm trying to cover it.
But it is a solid game. It's a solid top-down shooter. It's sort of like a more family... Can I call it a family-friendly version of Hotline Miami? I guess I could. anything is more family-friendly than Hotline Miami.
There is blood and body parts, like people explode if you shoot rockets at them. But
yeah, but it's all neon.
It's so far away and it's so low detail that I wouldn't consider it to be like visceral the way that that Hotline Miami is when you're up close staring at these very brightly colored characters just smash other characters' heads in.
Sort of reminds me of an older game that was also a top-down shooter, not quite Robotron 2084, but after that, which you had, it's sort of like on the same gore level as More Prizes, I forgot the name of it, Smash TV. It's more akin to that, except it has the same level of realism, so it's like when you're jibbing someone, it's not like it's someone being jibbed, it's more like, it's like a balloon popped full of blood.
Yeah, and Judge, it's low detail enough that it's more like you just broke a tinker toy apart and blood flew out of it.
Or you really mishandled your stretched Armstrong.
Yeah. But what I have been playing this last week is Total War Warhammer 2.
Okay. I own the original, and I couldn't play it because the game is just so it's so obscure, and, you know, it's like, how come I'm losing? There's no reason why I'm losing. Then you find out, oh, you have to do this, this, and this, and this. It's like, oh, so you have to follow instructions? Screw that. I don't follow instructions in Civ 6. I need to do it here. So how are the new races?
I like them. I like them a lot. My favorite so far has been the Skaven, which are the rat-like people.
Yeah, those are, by the way, who you fight in Vermintide.
Uh-huh.
By the way, just so you know, people out there, Total Warhammer 2 is more like a full-priced standalone expansion than an actual sequel.
I think they
called it Total Warhammer 2 so that people who were put off by the first Warhammer will think there's improvements. And they have improved everything, but it's not a true sequel.
I mean, it depends. I've seen a lot of arguments and debate on this. Particularly where I stand is that it's an entirely new campaign. It's an entirely new map. You've got four new races with different mechanics and all sorts of different new units and heroes to them. So, you could call it an expansion. I would call it, if you want to go as far as that, I would say it's one of the most generous expansions ever given, because it's like a season pass worth of content.
Yeah, anyway, the new races are the Skaven, the High Elves, the Dark Elves, and the Lizard Men. And by the way, a lot of people thought that those races should have been in the first game anyway.
Yeah, I can see their points on that, but this is a good place for them in this campaign, because you got the Great Vortex, and... Everybody is racing to get their hands on all that magical power. For those who don't know, the Great Vortex is basically a conduit of magical energy that the Dark Elves use to keep demons in the High Elves use to keep demons in check. And so when it gets thrown off kilter, everybody tries to go out and control it. Like the Dark Elves are trying to raise their demon gods. The Lizard Men are trying to get control of it because they fought the demons in the past. The High Elves created the Great Vortex, so they're just trying to harness it again. And then the Skaven just want to kill everybody, and they think that that would be a great weapon to use.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, they're the ones who are in Vermintide, you know, who replace instead of zombies, are fighting rats, and that's what the Skaven are.
Yeah, and they have a really good set of, like, rules to them as far
as the
game goes.
Aren't they the Zerg in this? Aren't they the Zerg in this? They just do the mass attacks.
Not quite. They're cowardly. They do fight in numbers, but they're also quick to scare away. And so you've got to be more careful about managing them and rallying them together. But the big thing behind them is that their entire economy is based on food. And so you keep your troops happy and keep your cities happy, your settlements happy, and raise them up by killing other armies and turning them into food.
Right, like and zombies.
Sort of.
Yeah.
And the other big thing behind that is that you can use food to, like, call up a spawn of, like, a Skaven army in the middle, like, wherever you choose to do on a battlefield. So, like, there's a set of archers over on the hill that's giving you trouble, but it's just like one set of archers, you can call up a little group of Skavens right underneath their feet and just like put them on them and let them go to work while you're taking care of the main forces.
Yeah. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
I've been playing more of Wise 2 and also Minecraft. I'm pretty much always playing like stuff like Minecraft because it's just an easy game to keep playing.
Here's a question. I forgot the answer to this, but do you have a group that you work on one level with?
In Minecraft, yeah. We have a server and we do builds and all various things.
Anybody's actually created a city, but like 200 people have worked on it for so long.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, because it could be like Second Life, you know?
People have made London, Amsterdam, I think New York, a bunch of cities have been made, real life ones and just, you know, fantastical ones. So,
you know what
yeah.
would be great is if you could copy a server and then just trash the city in that server, sort of like when you build a sandcastle
you
and destroy it.
You could do that if that's what you wanted to do.
I mean, you know, you keep the old one, but the new one, you just want to say, okay, let's trash this. Let's see how badly yeah. we can have an apocalypse in New York.
Yeah, you could totally do that, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you copy it to another. It's like copying a save file, and you just access that save file and do the destruction you want to, and then you can go back to your original file, your backup, and then...
That would be great to do for New Year's Eve, actually, now that I think about it. You know, it's sort of like, you know when an MMO is about to be closed, and they just have this one event in which everything is trashed or whatever? That would be a great thing to do for Minecraft. I mean, I don't mean close it forever. I just mean, like, you know, okay, so let's... We've worked, and now we're gonna destroy it. You create to destroy. So when you're playing Ease, do you have three ready as soon as you finish two?
Yes, I do. It's the Oath of Veldgar or something like that. It's a remake or revisioning of the original one, Wanderer's Wight. I played it originally on the SNES, so in a way I feel like I should almost just go right to part four, which I'll probably have to emulate. But anyways, yeah, I will be going on to with the Volcar after that one.
Is Trails from the Sky coming soon?
The third one, yeah, it's out. I have it as well. I've been playing that too.
Okay. So let me ask you a question: is there a need to copy save files, or it always ends the way it ends?
You can copy the save file.
Import the save file.
You can import the save file. You get little bonuses and stuff.
Oh, okay. Cool. So, as for me, I played Gone Home, because it was free. And I played Oxenfree. And I played the second episode of the Batman Telltale game, which we're going to be discussing later in this podcast. Gone Home, I was not expecting to be a walking simulator. I mean, I thought it was it was more of an adventure game, but it's a walking simulator, and the story's okay. Unfortunately, I don't know, the story left me a little bit cold because I'd heard that story many, many times before. You know, South Park used to make fun of stories like that. Oxenfree I really, really liked. The ending that I came up with I liked, so I'm not going to play Oxenfree again, even though I know there are multiple things you can do because I just liked the way it ended. My game ended, so it's that's my canonical ending, that's it. I don't have to see anything more. And I like the story. I like the way things went. For those who don't know, I got I forgot their names. The dorky guy and the emo girl to get together at the end. The other plus about the game is a character named Jonas. And they actually explain why his name is not Jonah in it too. My character became besties with her half brother Jonah, and me and Clarissa became a pair. So everything was high, you know, and I got to see what other players had chosen, and I saw that all my things were what most people chose. I'm pretty sure there's an ending in which you just screw Clarissa over and let her die or whatever. I'm pretty sure there's an ending in which you and your half brother become enemies and don't like each other. I wouldn't have minded it if I forgot their names. If the girl and the guy didn't get together. And sort of just like, you know, just friends sort of thing. I don't know if it'll work out between the two, because one is sort of like Ali Sheedy from The Breakfast Club, and the other's a stoner who loves his hash brownies. But they are giving it a chance, and that's all you can ask for.
So I did want to ask you, because this was something that I hit on last week when I was talking about this game. What did you think of it? Like, as a horror point and click, did you like it? Like, the horror elements of it?
It wasn't scary. It was, to me, it was a combination science fiction psychological thriller.
I can get behind that.
And I didn't quite know where it was going until halfway through, and then said, "Oh, okay, now I know what's going on." So, I mean, I liked the the radio mechanic, and the acting and the writing was really good.
Yeah, they did a pretty great job on the voices in that game.
I did not know there was a collecting thing, which you had to collect all the letters from that the woman who used to own the place. I'm not going to do that. I don't think it's necessary. Maybe in some future I will play the game again. And this time I'll actively look for those notes.
I did want to add that I saw a little Let's Play demo of the Project Octopath, and now I really want to get the Switch. I feel like that's a console seller.
Yeah, that was one of the news items that I was thinking about putting in, but I didn't. But I will say this, Scott, I think you'd really like Oxenfree.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dialogue is really natural, and they capture being a teenager really well in it. And even for an old fogey like me, I could see it. Yeah. And you could also, here's the thing, you know what they're, you can tell what their attitudes, they're, what they're wrong in, even though they think they're right, because mm-hmm. you had the life experience to know that they're wrong, but they have to figure it out themselves. but yeah, like I said, it's a really nice game, and also if you don't have to work hard to get the ending you want, mm-hmm. you just have to say the right things. I also noticed every time you talk, occasionally pictures of they'll have thought balloons and the pictures of that person will pop in their head. I think that's the mechanic in which they're getting affinity or losing affinity for characters. You know, right. They're starting to like them more or not like them more. I didn't pay much attention to them and I didn't need to, but it is interesting to see when you bring up something, they start thinking about that other character or they think about you, you know, and I like the dialogue choices. They're very natural. And unlike Mass Effect, in which sometimes you get the opposite reaction from a dialogue choice you think you're going to get. So yeah,
I would have that game on my wish list.
I think Oxenfree is like $10 on Steam.
It's on Steam, yes.
Something like that. So it's old, but you know it's really good. I like the art style too. The art style goes for sort of like a 16:32-bit characters on a 2D plane.
Mm-hmm. So. It's a little bit side scrolling, and I think I like the music, and it looks nice. Yeah.
Oh, the music.
It looks
really
like it looks like very detailed construction paper. Sort of like the point and click from Double Fine. Which one was that? The point and click from Double Fine. The last one that they did, the Kickstarter.
Yeah, and any game that has a character named after me, I can get behind anyway. So Batman Episode 2, I liked. I didn't know if I was gonna like it because mild spoiler, it's already revealed in the trailer. Harley Quinn is in it, and the roles with her and the Joker are sort of reversed, but then I realized they're not that reversed. And then, spoiler, Harley seems to be sane, and she reveals that she's actually sane near the end of the episode. And here's the thing. Joker is acting like a dude who really wants to date the cheerleader, and Harley is the cheerleader, and he's just bowing and scraping for her. I can see where that might get her killed.
Yeah.
And one of the funny things is that if you're too nice to Harley, the Joker actually starts getting jealous. He acts like a jealous boyfriend. Bane is in it. That's not a surprise either. I don't know where if I like the way that he's presented or not. He's not like he usually is presented. But then again, he's more realistic in terms of his face. And instead of having the venom go directly into his body, like you see in the cartoons, you know, you have those tubes in the back. Instead, he takes a Star Trek hypospray and just injects himself in the neck with it. You also have Mr. Freeze, and I like the way he's portrayed in it. And there is a spoiler character that appears in the end. I'm not going to say who it is. I will say that I did back Amanda Waller all the way in this. And I got away with it because I just told Jim that she knew who I was. You know, she knew that I was Bruce Wayne. Although I didn't tell Jim I was Bruce Wayne. As a matter of fact, Amanda tries to tell Gordon that Batman's Bruce Wayne, but Gordon interrupts her and says, "I don't want to know." So yeah, I just have Gordon worried about me instead of being angry at me, you know. And Amanda Waller really likes me, and I think it's important that she be on my side, even though everybody does. You know, be careful if you do anything to screw her, she's gonna betray you. So I'm making sure of that. I don't care if she betrays me. And I know that me and Jim are besties. Although I will say this though, you can't rely on the comic books because this is not in comic book continuity. This is Telltale's own take on Batman. Had I did a certain choice in episode one, Alfred will only have one eye. I didn't. So Alfred has both his eyes, but I have a nick in my ear. because I took the blow. And I don't mind. Let him have that thing. It's sort of like Batman Mask of the Phantasm in that in this game, Bruce is really gets really hurt. And he has bruises all and burn marks and all over him, and it's great. And the thing is that, you know, a lot of the game focuses on Bruce Wayne and not Batman, which is a nice twist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the news items will have one of the blunders that Telltale made. Well, we'll discuss that later. As for Gone Home, like I said, walking simulator, and it's fine. It's fine. There's no need for me to play it again. I got the one achievement for finishing it, and that's all I need. Anyway, we're going to move on to the gaming flashback, and this week it's Portal. Portal is a puzzle platform video game developed and published by Valve Corporation. It was released in a bundle package called the Orange Box for Microsoft Windows, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 3 in 2007. Just a little side note, which it doesn't mention, the Orange Box also included Half-Life 2, Half-Life 2 Episode 1, Half-Life 2 Episode 2, and Team Fortress 2. And, yeah, we're still waiting for Half-Life 2 Episode 3. That's never going to happen. The game has since been ported to other systems, including OS X, Linux, and Android. Portal consists primarily of a series of puzzles that must be solved by teleporting the player's characters and simple objects using the, quote, Aperture Science handheld portal device, a device that can create interspatial portals between two flat planes. I will also add that it's basically the zero-point gun with a different power, the zero-point energy gun. The player character, Chell, is challenged and taunted by an artificial intelligence named GLaDOS, Genetic Lifeform and Disk Operating System, to complete each puzzle in the Aperture Science Enrichment Center using a portal gun with a promise of receiving cake when all the puzzles are completed, which created a meme that people got quickly tired of three months later. the game's unique physics allows momentum to be retained through portals, and then GLaDOS says, speedy thing goes in, speedy thing comes out. Requiring creative use of portals to maneuver through the test chambers. The gameplay element is based on a similar concept from the game Norbacular Drop. Many of the team members from DigiPen Institute of Technology who worked on Norbacular Drop were hired by Valve for the creation of Portal, making it a spiritual successor to that game. Portal was acclaimed as one of the most original games of 2007, despite criticisms of its short duration and limited story. The game received praise for its originality, unique gameplay, and dark story with humorous series of dialogues. GLaDOS, voiced by Ellen McLean in the English language version, received acclaim for her unique characterization and the end credit song Still Alive, written by Jonathan Coulton for the game, which was acclaimed for its original composition and humorous twist. She also appeared in Poker Night 2 as the host. So, yeah, let's talk about Portal. Now, here's the thing that is sort of misleading. GLaDOS doesn't really reveal herself as an AI until very late in the game. Most of the time, she sounds like an automated message, you know. And but she was the breakout hit of the character. It's between her and Shodan. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people have called GLaDOS Shodan's nutty aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So, when did you first play Portal, TJ?
It took me a long time. I don't think it was until 2004, actually, that I played it for the first time.
You can't have played it in 2004 because it was released in 2007. Try again.
Oh, wait, hold on. No, 2014. So, 7 years after it was released.
Well, that's the other thing, is that Portal was released free before the release of Portal 2. They just gave it away. They said, everybody can have it.
And I think that's when I finally got my hands on it, which, like, I'm happy I did, because I it was spoiled for me, all the memes, it was unavoidable. But but the puzzle aspect of the game has always been appealing. It's an incredible mechanic they came up with. Like, you see just, like, all the unique ways people came up with to solve situations, like the sheer amount of workarounds that people have come up with for speedruns for that game. People still come up with things to speedrun Portal, and it's incredible.
I have to say, there is what's it called? Portal, when you got it, was changed from the Portal when I first played it. And here's the funny part, is that I wanted to play Portal badly because I saw a few screenshots from it and said, okay, yeah, Team Fortress 2, whatever. For Half-Life 2, whatever. This is new. I want to try it. I don't care how long it is. It's part of it. It's part of the orange box, so it's not like if it's short. And it's, you can, if you take your time, it's like an hour and a half. Yeah, the song caught me at the surprise at the end. And like I said, I'm lucky that I played it without having any reactions to it. So all the memes were, I was immune to all the memes. I did not know the cake was a lie. Well, I knew the cake was a lie. Here's the thing. Everybody knew the cake was a lie, you know. But it's funny how many things sprung up from it. Like the story of Doug Ratman, you only get hints of him in Portal 1, right? He's the one who makes all those paints and all that stuff, telling you where to go. And you also find his little areas in which he professes his love for the companion cube. But it wasn't explored until this comic book. And it was a really sad comic book, which bridged Portal and Portal 2.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly in Portal 2 he's on the moon.
Okay. But the other thing is that there were a lot of imitators after this. One of them was Quantum Conundrum, which had John DeLancey as the GLaDOS type character. And I will tell you this, you know, I could listen to John DeLancey say anything.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't played it, I just know he's in it. And if Ellen McLean couldn't have been available, I would have minded him in Portal. So, by the way, we're going to briefly discuss Portal 2. Gladys is in it, and she's now your companion. But the new voice that's always constantly talking to you, which is a recording, is oh, jeez, I forgot his name already.
Wheatley?
What? No, not Wheatley. Not Wheatley.
Oh.
No, he's the antagonist.
Oh, Cave.
Yeah, okay. Cave Johnson. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Cave Johnson.
That's recording.
He's who's played by the wonderful J.K. Simmons, and he's someone I could listen to all the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, leave it to not Valve, but the guys who did Narbacular Drop to make a puzzle game, what's called Instant Hit. Because that's all it is. It's an action puzzle game. That's all it does. And
really fun and intuitive and simple, and sometimes simple things, a simple mechanic can be made a lot of fun and you can get a lot of use out of. Because I like that when the first game came out, I didn't play the first game first. I played the second game first. I played it out of order. I do
that
sometimes.
That must have been strange.
And so, yeah, so it was a little weird to do it that way, but it was fine. And I played it, and it was cool how in the first game you have your portals and you're learning about the physics and how you can move things through the portals, and then in the second one they add like this paint stuff that you can have extra effects with, like bouncing off of it or putting portals on it, and there's a few other effects I forget now, but it's just a really fun game, and you just sit there and you try to figure these puzzles out, and I love the mod or not mods but the workshop community where people made their own custom maps, and some of them are so complex they take you hours to solve.
Now, getting back to my original interruption of him talking about speedruns and all that, when the game was re-released, it added achievements, obviously, and new achievements on how fast you can get through things or how many moves you can make and how many pickups and all that stuff. It also added Chell at the end being dragged away by a robot as a sequel hook for Portal 2, which wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was meme-tacular. I mean, you know. And the funny thing is, I still liked the next Still Alive song that came after, which was for... oh, damn, I can't believe I forgot the name of it. The parkour game. Mirror's Edge. Mirror's Edge, the next year, had a song called Still Alive as well, which I actually liked more. But it was still, here's the thing, it was still like, wait, what? When the credits started playing and the song was starting being sung, it's like, oh, okay. They went the extra mile for this. By the way, the writers of the game, one of them was for a website called Quarter to Four. I forgot the name of the site. I'm forgetting a lot of things. But yeah, if you haven't played Portal, it's free. Go ahead and play it.
Mm-hmm. There's still stuff to be gleaned out of it even now, because there's so many things you can do with those mechanics that are just like inside and outside of the game. Like inside and outside of the confines of the levels, they're quite unique.
Yeah. Anyways, we actually looked out this week. I didn't know if we were going to have some great news, but you know what? A lot of great news plopped in our lap. Go ahead, TJ, with the first news item.
Chris Avellone may be teasing a new Fallout game. Sorry, I'm going to try that again. Chris Avellone may be teasing a new Fallout game from PC Gamer. Chris Avellone is an RPG machine. His credits stretch back 2 decades to games including Planescape Torment, Icewind Dale, KOTOR 2, Neverwinter Nights 2, and in 2017 alone, Torment, Tides of Numenera, Prey, and Divinity Original Sin 2. He also had a hand in Fallout 2 and Fallout New Vegas, which is why a recent bit of activity on his Facebook page has caused quite a stir among fans. It may be nothing, it's probably nothing, but Avellone posted an image of 3 Vault Boys on his timeline on September 29th, one of them with his hand on an RPG Bible, one reading a plot outline, and one apparently in love with his big brain, to mark the 20th anniversary of the release of the original Fallout. That in of itself isn't necessarily a big deal. 20 years is a big number, and one worth celebrating, after all. But a few days after he updated his profile picture to a hand-drawn image of what is presumably meant to be himself hugging the Vault Boy, under the words, "I missed you so much." That's a little more on the nose, and the reactions are about what you'd expect. Heavy breathing, take my money, and at least one Daniel Bryan meme. Avellone is a busy guy these days with projects including Pathfinder, Kingmaker, the System Shock reboot, and Bard's Tale 4 on the go. Aside from this image, we're not aware of anything he's done to indicate that he might be involved with the Fallout series again. But at the same time, one can't help but think about what In Exile boss Brian Fargo said a couple years ago about its 2014 filing for a Van Buren trademark.
For those who don't know, Van Buren was the codename for Fallout 3 when it was still a isometric RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, there's been a lot of people asking, when are we going to have Fallout New Vegas 2?
Oh, man, I'd love that. But, I mean, Obsidian is... Actually, what is Obsidian working on right now? They're working on...
Two.
Right. And they're well on their way with that. I mean, and I don't know...
I think they're also doing Fractured Butthole still. I think that's still being worked on with one of their teams.
They're working on Armored... Was Armored Warfare actually released? They, I don't know. You know, there's always themes... I hope they work on Alpha Protocol 2, to be honest. But, yeah.
It could be something. It might not be nothing. I do find it interesting when... having these crowdfunding games really just highlights the differences between when a corporate company is paying the development and when the public, I guess, is paying the development. And when it, and again, in this case, if Chris Avellone has begun development on the Fallout game, you're not going to hear anything about it until it's ready for, well, almost ready for release.
Well, here's the thing. Chris Avellone, by the way, is more of a writer. He's not an actual developer. Yeah. He's a writer.
Okay, well, if he's doing writing for it, we're not going to hear any kind of confirmation in for a while, but it's interesting to keep in mind that he may have to, you know, talk to the Bethesda people and, you know, gotten a deal or something to work on the next Fallout, but it might not have begun yet. They might still be developing it. They might be working on Elder Scrolls first. It's just too many factors to know what exactly is going on.
Here's the thing. I just find it curious you'd have a picture of the Vault Boy reading a plot outline. That, mm-hmm. to me, is like, here, Vault Boy, I wrote this for you. And his hand on an RPG Bible sort of tells me maybe Chris Avellone has been going back. Here's the thing about Chris Avellone. When he does a project, he makes sure he knows everything about it. When he didn't know that much about Star Wars when he made KOTOR 2, so he had to read everything about it, which is why KOTOR 2 is so harsh towards the Star Wars franchise, because he really didn't like the black and white of it and how the Force is this, which is why the entire plot of KOTOR 2 is the main character, the villain is trying to kill the Force itself. You know?
Yeah.
So Obsidian, by the way, is only working on Pillars of Eternity 2 right now.
That kind of image makes me feel like he would be going back to the origins of Fallout or something. Like he wants to go back to isometric or something, or at least, I don't know, just get more RPG elements if he was working on Fallout to return it to that.
Now, here's an intriguing question thing to think about. Now, recently, this past weekend, Fallout was free on Steam. And I'm wondering if they're trying to get people's appetites ready for a new Fallout isometric game.
That is interesting.
Maybe. I mean, it's hard to speculate on exactly what any of this could be. But that last image has me super intrigued, because I miss you so much makes sense. I missed you. ED is a packed word.
Yeah. I don't know. Can you imagine... Here's the thing. Maybe not even release a Fallout game. Could you imagine if they released a game called Van Buren?
Yeah.
That, you know, make a Fallout game without the name Fallout. As a matter of fact, if you remember, Fallout itself was supposed to be a GURPS game.
Yeah, well, there's Wasteland, so we do have precedents for, you know...
Well, that's just it. Fallout was supposed to be Wasteland, but they couldn't get the rights to Wasteland, so they decided to make a Fallout. And they went to Steve Jackson and asked him to use his GURPS system. Steve Jackson initially said yes. And then Steve Jackson started asking for more money as they went along. They dumped GURPS and made the special system.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows? It wouldn't be the first time that they went around a copyright by just making a game that's sort of like it. I mean, that's what Pillars of Eternity is, for crying out loud. And by the way, Tides of Numenera is basically Planescape Torment, just without the name.
But yeah. they have Planescape in the words. I think they would. That's pretty, and there's definitely in Sigil. I think the city called
Planescape. Sigil is the name of the City of Pain. Yes, I mean, yeah. Ruled over by the Lady of Pain.
Right. So they definitely can't get around a copyright there. That's.
Well, they don't have to get a Dungeons and Dragons copyright. They can just create their own damn gods. Create your own god. Anyway, we're going to move on. Street Fighter V will finally get an arcade mode in 2018. This comes to us from Eurogamer. Capcom has confirmed Street Fighter V Arcade Edition. The fighting game comes out on the 16th of January in 2018, priced for $40. It'll include all 28 characters, including some of those from Season 1 and 2. One more character from Season 2 is still to be announced. And each character gets a second V-trigger, although Capcom has yet to detail them. Also included is the long-awaited arcade mode, extra battle mode, a gallery, and a redesigned user interface. All the new gameplay-related content will be available as part of a free in-game update for current players, Capcom said. Current players still have to buy the DLC characters. Amazon leaked this back in May. So, yeah, I know, TJ, you're just itching to make a comment about this.
For once, I'm not going to poop on Capcom about this. That's my usual MO, because Capcom is greedy. I'm actually cautiously optimistic, I would say.
Well, here's the thing. You could say they were greedy, but all the gameplay content that's being included in the arcade edition is going to be free for people who already own Street Fighter V. The only thing they're not going to get are the DLC. So yeah, this is basically Capcom saying, oh, we screwed up.
We screwed up for 20 years. Actually, 30 years, but...
Well, in the case of Street Fighter V, we screwed up for the past 3 years.
I mean, no. What I'm saying is that for them to actually go out of their way to release an update like this for free instead of actually making people pay for it...
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter Turbo Edition, Street Fighter Ultra
Mega...
Yeah,
exactly. So when I say...
How many versions of Street Fighter 4 were released again?
Yeah, so when I say we screwed up for 30 years, I mean we screwed up for 30 years. That's cool. I'm glad that they're putting stuff in there that should have been released when the game released.
You know, I have a feeling that this is partly due to NetherRealms, because NetherRealms was showing Street Fighter how it's done.
Yeah, and I mean... Not only are you getting NetherRealms, like, putting on a clinic every time they go out to play, you've got Guilty Gear and Arc System Works, like,
is working on
killing
the
scene with
Dragon Ball FighterZ. And that's the other thing, is Capcom probably sees that coming out and say, uh-oh, they're coming on our turf now. Because here's the thing, you could say NetherRealms and the Mortal Kombat or DC or Injustice things are a different type of game, right? They're their end, you know, they're sort of like the Western. But when you have something like Dragon Ball FighterZ coming out, which is using the same sort of cel-shaded animation and same sort of quick fighting, you could see Capcom saying, uh-oh, we better...
I mean, with Street Fighter 4, Street Fighter 3, Street Fighter 2, Capcom had nothing to worry about because they were the top dog. There was, like, even if there was competition,
like Tekken, it was Soul Calibur.
It was never substantial enough to, like... If you're going to be a pro and you're going to go on the circuit and you're going to go to Evo someday, you better be good at Street Fighter. That was the rule. And now we're at a point where Mortal Kombat X has a huge following in the esports scene.
Well, yeah, we just had it on ESPN for crying out loud.
Yeah, Injustice 2 is going to have a huge following at Evo. I mean, Guilty Gear has been substantially rising on viewership and playership every year. BlazBlue is killing it, and they're coming out with...
Yeah, but I seriously think that Dragon Ball FighterZ is the atomic bomb that Capcom is looking at, because that's probably going to blow up, because not only does Dragon FighterZ have a huge, huge fan base, but you also have an established fighting game developer working on it.
Yes. I mean, when Arc System Works came out with Guilty Gear Xrd, and pretty much crafted that whole sort of 2D, 3D anime, like, but also 3D models scape into their fighting game. They kind of changed the game. They, like, took everything that Capcom had capitalized on with Street Fighter 4, and they pushed it up to the next level of, like, visual, just, like, spectacle. It's all a spectacle. Arc System Works is doing, like, a 2D fighting game the way it looks without 3D graphics better than anyone else right now. And that translates so damn well to Dragon Ball FighterZ and everything that goes on with the animation that's already in that series.
Who's it? I think it's Square Enix who's publishing it, right? Dragon Ball FighterZ?
Bandai Namco.
Oh, right.
Bandai has the rights to Dragon Ball.
I must have gotten confused because it was right next to Ni No Kuni 2, and that's being published by Square.
But yeah, so good on Capcom to look at the market and realize they need to up their game. I'm happy to see that they at least are pushed so far into a corner that they have to try, because for a long time they didn't.
Yeah, it's the first time in a long time that I've actually seen negative. A whole stream of negative comments about Street Fighter V for the past few months and how it's not a very good game. I haven't played it, so I can't make an opinion, so I'm going by secondhand, and it's like, that's the first time in a long while I heard that.
Yeah, I mean, it feels slow and plodding to me compared to a lot of other fighters that are out there right now. There's still a lot of strategic effort that goes into it, but compared to like Injustice 2 and Guilty Gear Xrd, it just feels like watching a kid go on a slip and slide versus watching a kid wade through like Jell-O.
You know, by the way, speaking of Injustice 2, so I already have them because I paid for the expensive version of it. I downloaded Raiden, and I found myself just making his my main character in the main skin for him, Black Lightning. Because here's the thing, I really enjoy watching Black Lightning interact with everybody, because he's one of the few characters who's an absolute good guy and wants to be a good guy. He even tells Superman that he prefers him when he was a hero. He gets along great with people like Jay Garrick and all that stuff. I'm not sure I like his fighting style, because it's a lot of big moves. But I really like watching him interact with everybody. Raiden I couldn't care about, even though he's a good guy, but we already have a Mortal Kombat character. I didn't need another one. You know, it's too bad. By the way, Reginald Hudlin is finally publishing Milestone stuff in the DC banner. So here, Raiden was supposed to be Static from the very start. So maybe they'll have Static again, you know.
Did you see the reveal of Adam?
Yeah. That wasn't much of a... We knew Adam was coming because we saw his because we saw his portrait. It couldn't have been anybody else but him. Yeah, he looks okay. It was surprising it's Ryan Choi, the Ryan Choi version of the character.
Mm-hmm. It looks like they're going for a lot of rushdown and trick play with him, which is going to be really fun and cool.
Yeah, what's funny is that when he hits people, he goes down into a single pixel and fights them as a single pixel.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got him confused with his Marvel equivalent because his finishing move has him turning into a giant and pounding somebody. I don't recall the Atom being able to grow in size. I only remember him being able to shrink in size.
I don't know enough about the Atom to know what his powers are.
I just know being able to grow into a giant or shrink is basically Hank Pym's thing, not the Atom.
Hmm.
Ant-Man, for those of you who don't know. Oh, anyways, so we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. The SNES Classic has been hacked. This is from Polygon. The SNES Classic hack attempts began the moment the console was released, and it appears as though it is now possible to add your own ROMs to the system. This isn't a simple process. You also run the risk of bricking your console, and it's not like you're going to be able to just buy a new one if that happens. This is an early version of the exploit, so it's quite a few steps and reasonably complicated process, which is likely to become a bit easier in the coming few weeks. YouTuber user Skeletor wrote in his instructional video. However, if you want to get started adding your own ROMs to the SNES Mini today, this is the only method I am aware of which will allow for this. Less scary tools should be out in the near future. The SNES Classic ultimately had a tool that made it simple for anyone to add more games to the system. Doing so is legally dubious, of course, but we all knew this day was coming. The good news is that this is now possible. The bad news is the systems are sold out everywhere, and you look, except for the gray market, Nintendo and retailers both stated that more games will be released before in the holiday system.
Bullshit.
And all I'm going to say is Raspberry Pi. That's all you need is a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, I mean, you own it. You should be able to do whatever you want with it, just as long as you don't profit from it.
You can download go get a Raspberry Pi and get an SD card, and no problem.
Yeah.
If I want to hit my SNES Classic with a hammer until it plays more games, that is my prerogative.
How many games does it have? It's like 30, and not all of them are good.
Yeah.
There are ways to... I mean, I think I've seen people selling SNES, you know, quote unquote unofficial classics that have like 500 games or something on there. And like I said, all you need is a Raspberry Pi. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Now, here are the games that are on the SNES Classic: Contra 3, Donkey Kong Country, Final Fantasy VI, F-Zero, Kirby Superstar, Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, Mega Man 10, Secret of Mana, Star Fox 2, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Super Mario Kart, Super Mario RPG, Super Mario World, Super Mario 2, Super Metroid, Earthbound, Kirby's Dream Course, Street Fighter 2, Hyper Fighting, Super Castlevania 4, Super Punch-Out, Fire Emblem, Mystery of the Emblem, Legend of the Mystic Ninja, Paneled Upon, Super Soccer, and Super Street Fighter 2, the new challengers. Oh, great. They have two. See, this is what I'm talking about with they have two Super Street Fighter games on it. How many versions of Street Fighter 2 have been released over the years? 20?
yeah. Like, a good amount of them, I'll say that much. More than need to exist.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just like, that's not even 30 games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
27 games, I thought. 12. Oh. And it's, you know, Nintendo really dropped the ball on this, and I think, you know, maybe, I don't know if they'll even notice or care. They probably won't, but, you know, they could have sold bundles of games to add to the console, and, you know, that would have made them money. People would have bought it, but
why not have, you know, why not let it be able to hook up to the Nintendo store so you could buy additional games and load them onto your thing, you know?
That would have been fine.
I mean, people would still pay $5 to download a couple of kilobytes onto their system, but at least they have more of a selection. Although I'm willing to bet you maybe they're thinking, we're going to make the Super NES Classic Edition 2 with new games on it. Yeah, wow, goody. You get to pay another $200 for it, or $80 for it.
Yeah, no, I don't think people are going to do that. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, I'm just sitting here thinking about, like, if there would ever... if they ever even had the forethought to make it so that the SNES controllers that you would get with the SNES Classic could maybe coordinate with the Switch, because that would be cool.
Hey, at least the NES Classic controllers, I mean the Super Nintendo Classic controllers work with the NES Classic if you happen to own both.
Yeah, that's good. But yeah, I mean, the SNES controller is probably one of the best controllers ever made, as far as just like game pads go.
I'm still gonna go with you. I mean, here, people are gonna mock me for this, but I still love the original Duke controller for the original Xbox.
The big thing was a brick.
Yeah, but it also had something I like to call ergonomics. it felt better in my hand. It felt better in my hand than any other controller because it was molded to fit my hands. I didn't have tiny little baby hands like a lot of, and my hands aren't big either, so. Anyways, we're going to move on to the final item. Go ahead. Go ahead, TJ.
Me? I'm sorry. Yes. You cut out a little bit there.
This is you.
Okay. Telltale patch removes assassinated ambassador from Batman: The Enemy Within from VG247. Telltale Games has issued a statement regarding the unfortunate inclusion of Andrei Karlov, the Russian ambassador to Turkey, appearing in Batman: The Enemy Within. Earlier this week, an image of Karlov showing the aftermath of his assassination was discovered in Batman: The Enemy Within. The image of his death was apparently used and superimposed into the Gotham brokerage in-game scene showing a robbery had taken place. You can see this rather clearly in a hands-on video from...
Cut that part out, don't worry about it.
Okay. Side-by-side comparisons were shown all over the internet, showing the similarities. It was likely an honest mistake by someone on the team thinking it was a stock image and changed to fit the artwork. But its inclusion wasn't vetted thoroughly, it seems, and Telltale is taking the issue very seriously. An update to the game has been submitted this morning that will be removing the image across all platforms, a Telltale representative told Gamma Sutra. As of today, the patch was applied to the game.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, it's so generic. If you ever see it, for one thing, they actually stretch the guy out. But it's a guy in a suit laying flat on his back, and you pixelate it to the point that, you know, you can barely see it's the same image. You know, I mean, people have used this kind of stock footage all the time. Why is this guy different? Because it's too soon, I guess?
I would say that, like, I mean, there are people out there that are going to say that's insensitive, but it's not like the Karlov family will be sitting at home playing Batman: The Enemy Within and then
well,
suddenly see that image and break into tears.
You have the JFK assassination being used all the time, and the assassination of the Vietnamese guy.
I was going to say the same people that are probably making that complaint that it's insensitive. We're probably also buying the Rage Against the Machine album that had the Burning Monk on it back in the 90s.
Oh, I was about to say, what about the 60s? Because that's when the monks were burning themselves in protest over the Vietnam War.
Yeah, and then Rage Against the Machine actually took an image of a burning monk and put it on their album cover.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I guess it's, you know, you could say it's too soon. You know, it's stock footage. It's, you know, people are going to have images of living people too and things when they're famous enough. I guess maybe it's an insult to him to say that he wasn't famous enough to appear in the game. He's not famous enough for public domain, damn it. Where did they find the image either? Was it in Getty Images or something? Did they look up assassinated guy in the, you know what I would have done? Just had some person dress in a suit and lay down on the floor, damn it. This isn't something you need stock footage for.
Yeah.
Is it hard to take a picture, take a cell phone picture of someone laying down on the floor? You could even make it bloodier, you know, put a bullet hole in every part of his body and boom, it looks worse. It's just lazy.
I mean, there are gangster stock footage assassinations.
that oh, yeah, are... you have the graphic things of Dillinger being shot, his shot-up corpse that people have used before.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's silly because the image that they use is so generic, you know? You'd have to write find the right... I guess it was a Pulitzer Prize-winning photo or something like that, maybe. Hello? I'm sorry. I thought I just lost everybody.
No wonder.
I mean, they should have just had someone lay down on the ground on a white floor, take out their cell phone, snap a picture, and just upload it. Boom. You have a guy who's been shot.
They could have just looked at the description on whatever photo that they were grabbing and made sure that it wasn't something like from literally very recent times.
Yeah, but what if they had to buy the image from Getty Images though, or something like that? Just do it yourself. This isn't like House of the Dead, in which you have really bad voiceovers from the developers because they're talking. You're not even talking. You're just laying down. How can you not just lay down on the floor and screw that up?
I don't think anyone thought that Telltale thought this was going to be as big of a deal as it was when they did it.
Did anybody? Here's the thing. When I was playing it, I didn't see. Oh my God! It's that Russian. I didn't know who it was. I didn't care. It's just silly.
It's like there was a college student that was literally sitting in a current events class and then went home to play Batman and was like, I just learned about this today. Now I'm mad.
Actually, I think they were just amused and showed it off. And then other people got mad.
There do seem to be people that are like, they just professionally want to be offended at everything.
Oh, please don't say those three letters. You'll get banned from this podcast if you do.
I wasn't gonna say that. I was just saying.
Yeah, but that's the prelude to what people are gonna. That's what people are gonna say. You know, oh, you're such an SJW because you got offended. Fuck you. I'm allowed to be offended.
Well, the word for those is snowflake. People use snowflake for those.
Yeah. Well, winter is coming.
Yeah. Well, not for Florida, but yeah.
Hey, the way things are going, don't be surprised. Actually, I remember when it did snow in Florida like 10 years ago. They do have some early frosts. When it happens in Georgia, it ruins the citrus crop there. And it just devastates them. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. So yeah, this was a pretty good episode, I think. And, you know, let's cross our fingers over a new Fallout game that isn't Fallout 5.
That would be cool.
I haven't popped in Fallout 4 in like over a year.
Yeah, I haven't played it in a while either.
I finally deleted it off my hard drive on my PS4 the other day.
I deleted it a long time ago, but I still have the disc. You know, the thing about it is, the other thing about Fallout 4, it's like Oxenfree, in which I got the ending I wanted. I didn't need to play it. It's not like Mass Effect, in which, you know, here's the thing, I replayed Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 over and over and over again. I've not done a full replay of Mass Effect Andromeda. You know, open world games are very just, I don't want to replay open world games.
Yeah.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, have fun, be cool, y'all.
Okay, that is it.
Bye.